Our guest tonight on Drinks with Tony is Dan Close. Dan Close is the comic book legend. He did 8-Ball, Ghost World. He wrote the screenplay to Art School Confidential, and actually that was based on a 4-page comic that he did about 10 years ago. All-around genius. And the film Art School Confidential came out yesterday. So here is Dan Close, my interview with him. You're listening to Drinks with Tony on Pirate Cat Radio. Oh, really? Oh, did I bring back bad memories?
Yes, you did.
This is going to go to shit now.
Yeah,
you've already taken a long time. Anyway, hi, Daniel. I can't even say it right now. Screw it. I'll say it in the introduction. But Art School Confidential, this was your first screenplay that you wrote without having a comic attached to it, right? Am I right?
Well, you know, there actually was there's a 4-page comic strip I did in 1991 called Art School Confidential, but it's more like a mad magazine, you know, like the lighter side of Art School kind of thing rather than an actual story. So if I had adapted that directly into a film, it would have been about 4 minutes. So, you know, there's a lot of new stuff in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's that process like? One, going from writing comics to screenplays, and then not even having too much of a basis from your comic art for a script, just coming from a script. Are you do you actually do any sketches while you're writing your script? Or
yeah, you know, I found that coming from comics, like I had to sort of have a visual idea of what the characters looked like in order to write it. I started out writing this Art School screenplay, and I just didn't quite have a handle on the characters, and so I got a sketchbook, and I just did sketches of every single character. I did, like, you know, 60 little drawings until I got them exactly the way I wanted them to look, and then it was much, much easier to write after that.
Uh-huh. Did any of those drawings help in casting?
You know, it's funny. I got out the sketchbook to show to the casting woman, and we got the idea it was just sort of throwing her off, because it's like she figured that we wanted people who looked exactly like these people, and it wasn't really about their looks, but just sort of about their overall feel. And so we kind of took it away, and then later, after the film was all cast, I went through the book, and it was really amazing how exactly some of the actors looked like the drawings, and then some were so diametrically different that it was really interesting. They were either exact or way off. Huh. Yeah.
Will that be something we'll see in the DVD release, your sketches, hopefully?
Maybe so. There's actually a book of the screenplay where I put a couple pages of those, but
okay.
Maybe I'll do like a facsimile edition someday or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And I know that it seems like some of it's got to be autobiographical. How autobiographical was this film, particularly the John Malkovich played professor? Did you have anyone in mind when you were writing him?
Yeah, though I shouldn't get any more specific than that. I did go to art school in the late 70s, early 80s, and you know, my experience was a kid from Chicago moving to the heart of Brooklyn, New York, right during the most crime-filled years, and it was so that my experience in art school was this crazy scene, this kind of art school world, and the sort of the throes of the early 80s art boom, and then living in this really dangerous, scary pre-Giuliani New York, and so it was this really kind of exciting trial by fire kind of experience for me. And this movie is in some ways sort of a dream version of that, almost, where it's like having a nightmare about my years in art school.
And what's that like for you, seeing parts of your life on the big screen?
It's a very strange experience. It's like being able to project your thoughts in a way. Of course, I have such specific ideas of how everything would look that for something to be even slightly off is very frustrating. And of course, the process of making movies, especially when I'm not directing the movie myself, it's a very collaborative thing. And And so it's just an odd experience to see your sort of your vision of the world as filtered through somebody else's vision. It's can be very disconcerting in a way.
Are you on set when he's shooting?
Yeah. Both Ghost World and this film, I was around pretty much the whole time, just kind of to give him moral support. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Was there any last minute rewrites or let's do this?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's especially on low budget films. I think you're always having to rewrite. You know, you're finding out. You get there in the morning and there's, you know, horrible street noise or something, and you have to move to a different location all of a sudden and have to rewrite entire scenes based on a new location, or you realize you just don't have time to shoot four pages and you have to cut it down to two, things like that.
Yeah.
So you have to really think on your feet, which is not easy when you have to get up at 5 a.m. and go to the set. It's a crazy experience. It's really... You know, you have 6 weeks or so of just, you know, daily insanity, 12 hours a day. It'd be fun to make a movie if you could work like 3 hours a day on it.
Yeah.
But I can sort of see why they wouldn't want to spend the money for that.
Right. And the continuity of hair and beard and all that would probably...
You know, there's a guy whose job it is to look for all that, but even so, the guy is always missing stuff because there's so much going on. And I would find myself saying, no, that, you know, that pen moved in that shot. And, you know, a lot of it doesn't matter. You know, people go, who cares? Nobody will ever notice that. You know, if you watch movies after having made a movie, if you watch like a restaurant scene where they're cutting back between two angles, you'll see like glasses moving all over the place and stuff. They're just flying around, even in really like good directors' films, like the Coen brothers, people like that. It's nobody really cares about that stuff, and I don't think you notice it until you've had to watch movies in an editing room hundreds of times, and all of a sudden that stuff becomes very, very prominent. It's very frustrating as a movie watcher.
I love cigarettes. If there's a cigarette in the scene, I want to see the ash.
Always wrong. And this, you know, since this movie's set in art school, every character smokes. And so it's, you know, please don't watch the ashes in this film. That's all I can say.
Actually, I watched it last night and I didn't see too much. But
yeah. There you go. Watch it 4 more times.
What's it like collaborating with Terry, and how did you and him hook up?
You know, Terry just was a reader of my comics years ago and thought I might be a good guy to work with after he had finished his film Crumb, and we just got to know each other and wound up working on Ghost World together. And I find him he's just the funniest guy in the world, sort of unintentionally sometimes. He's got this really hilarious dark worldview, and it just almost everything he says cracks me up even after all these years. And my main goal in writing this film was to write something that Terry would respond to, and it was really the first thing I ever wrote in my whole career that was written for a very specific audience, and that was for Terry Zwigoff. Yeah, I'm not sure he's emblematic of the audience at large out there, but you know, for me it's gratifying to hear him laugh when he's reading the pages anyway.
When did you find out that because Ghost World was your first comic that was developed into a film, correct?
Yes.
Okay. When did you find out that that was going to be a film, and what was that experience like for you?
I mean, you know, we started working on it, I don't know, in 1997 or 98 or something. And then, you know, and we had a pretty decent version of the script by 1999, I would say, if not earlier. And then it was 2 long years before we got the financing for it. So that was just a horrible, draining experience. And, you know, now I could go through it because I sort of know what to expect. But at the time, you know, when you hear things like, yeah, on Wednesday they're going to make their decision. And then you sit by the phone all day Wednesday and you never hear anything and you can't get anybody on the phone. And then it's Thursday and it's Friday and then it's another 2 weeks. And just draining, you know, because you're sort of gearing your whole life for this thing to happen where you're going to have to, you know, move to LA and work on this film for you know, 2 months or whatever. And so it was really kind of a draining experience. So by the time it was actually made, I was so kind of beaten down that I kind of lost a lot of the excitement of you know, having it made. It was almost like a consolation prize.
In your writing, there's a lot of like loneliness, repressed sexuality, general outcastness in your characters. and you write it with such authenticity. how do you get to that point? Or, you know, I'm sure you're probably drawing from experience, but maybe reliving experiences that were, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm writing what, the kind of things that are sort of primal in my unconscious, you know, and I think I was quite a lonely, repressed adolescent. And I think, you know, that certainly lingers into adulthood. And so I'm interested in exploring those kinds of issues, and those things have a sort of a visceral appeal to me. So, you know, really, especially in writing the comics, you know, you have to devise stories that will keep you interested over the span of a year of sitting down at a drawing board in a room by yourself looking at a blank piece of paper. And so the stories better have some sort of primal emotional interest to you, or you'll never get through it. And so that's, you know, it all comes from stuff that's part of me, I guess.
And your wife, she knew of your work before you guys.
She, you know, it was a weird situation where she had a boyfriend who was a fan of mine, and she was getting my autograph for him, and then we got to talking, and then she wound up getting rid of the boyfriend for me. It was kind of an ugly scene for a while there. Yeah.
So is she? Does she read your work while you're doing it? Is she kind of your editor in the background?
We have an odd detente in our home where she has to, you know, she has to be very careful about what she says, because, you know, early on when we first got together, I would be working on something and she'd sort of not respond well to something, and then I'd be haunted by it, and I'd have to, you know, what's wrong with this? And she, oh, nothing, it's fine. And so now she has to have this kind of blank poker face and not really comment on anything until it's all kind of done, and then she's sort of required to say something fairly upbeat so I don't go into a black depression. So it's, I don't envy her, because she's really the only audience I care about in a certain way.
When you were in art school, did you ever have to figure draw a man who had no pubes and was totally shaved, like the scene in the movie?
Oh, you know, that's funny. I mean, that the actor brought that himself to the thing, and the guy he was sort of based on was actually extremely hairy, but I don't think he was willing to let that happen. But we had lots of interesting figure drawing experiences. You know, I went to school out in a really bad neighborhood in Brooklyn, and so it was like, you know, the attractive figure models didn't want to like take two subways to come out and pose out there. Wow. So we'd really get some strange specimens. I often think that's where my sort of grotesque drawing style came from, was, you know, drawing all these odd, you know, 65-year-old men, you know, in figure drawing class. Wow. It was, you know, we had a great time once when one of this male model got an erection in while he was posing, and he pretended to be asleep, which was an odd thing to do, I thought. And everybody was sort of uncomfortable. Nobody said anything. And then finally this kind of suburban girl pointed at him and said, "Do we have to draw that?" That's, you know, I think everybody has one of those stories if they go to art school long enough.
Yeah. And what was the answer regarding drawing the erection?
I don't know if there was an answer. Everybody sort of relieved this horrible tension in the room, and everybody laughed. I don't remember what the model did. I think he just continued to pretend to be asleep, which, you know, maybe that is the way to go.
Did it finally go down?
It did ultimately. I think everybody laughing probably did that to him. I'm sure he was thinking, you know, of like, you know, war atrocities or something, trying to get it to go away. Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I know. I felt bad for the guy.
Daniel Close, this week's guest on Pirate Cat Radio and Drinks with Tony. Of course, I got him to talk about the penis. It's always about the penis or masturbation or erections. And thank you, Daniel Close, for being our guest this week. His film, the film he scripted, Art School Confidential, out now. Directed by Terry Zwigoff, who also directed Ghost World and Big Santa. Go check it out. Funny film. Okay. Weekly 666 coming up in about 5 minutes. But first, here's Dead Can Dance doing a track called Song of the Sibyl. I'm Drinks with Tony. This is Pyrocat Radio.